Chapter 20. Day 270. Lucerna AB, 0501.
Jagdeer.
She woke, and for one fleeting moment forgot where she was. Then she remembered, and it was like a lead weight in her stomach.
Jagdeer.
Blanche was standing over her. The ready room was half-lit. Jagdeer had been slumbering on the couch, wearing most of her kit. Aggie Delruth was asleep in the armchair.
Give me a second, Mill,
Jagdeer said, sitting up and dropping her feet to the floor.
I don't think I can,
he said. She followed him into the briefing room. Viltry stood there, arms folded. The big glass-screened Auspex, which relayed tracks from the main systems in operations, lit the room with its pulsing green light. There was nothing on the screen, except for a half-dozen returns that the system had identified as Imperial patrols.
It's been quiet for 3 hours, said Viltry. Totally quiet.
You've been watching it for 3 hours,
Jagdeer yawned.
I couldn't sleep, said Viltry.
I think it's a woman,
Blanche smiled. Viltry laughed, but for some reason Jagdeer thought Blanche might have touched a nerve.
You got me up to see nothing, she said. Since when has it been this quiet?
Viltry asked.
They've been coming thick and fast since the moment we deployed on this world. Before that, even. Ask Kaminsky.
So? She shrugged. They wanted a night off. All that murder and destruction can take it out of you.
Bree,
Blanche said, a touch of disapproval in his tone.
I apologize. Extreme fatigue makes me flippant. You think something's coming?
Yes,
said Viltry.
So do I,
said Blanche.
I've been on to operations. They're jumpy. They know this is odd. Every base in the Zephonian is on standby.
Get the crews up and prepped, she said. Viltry nodded and hurried off.
Something you said,
Blanche remarked.
What?
That we could fend them off, deny them, unless they sent everything they had at us at once.
I must stop talking so much, said Jagdeer.
Why would they all be down, Bree? All of them. Every last machine. Why would they be doing that if they weren't arming and fueling and fitting their entire air command?
A buzzer sounded and Jagdeer jumped. It was the Vox intercom. Blanche lifted the set and answered.
Hangar 3 Umbra. Yes, sir. I see. Show us ready.
He hung up.
We've just gone to primary standby. Long-range Auspex has detected a significant background temperature rise in the air above the southern coast.
Meaning? He shrugged.
Maybe an awful lot of engines just started up at the same time.
The hangar lights came on. Fitters scrambled to perform last-minute pre-flight. Only the vaguest hint of dawn fell in through the hangar mouth. Markwell could smell the cold sea. The air. He fought his nerves. Everyone was tense, some because they seemed to know what might be coming, others precisely because they did not.
All right, Vander,
Van Tol said, walking over. He was eating dried rations. How could the man eat under pressure like this? Markwell wondered.
4A,
he replied. Van Tol smiled. There was blood on his gums. He was still suffering from the hypoxia. Throne help me, thought Markwell. Of all the ways to die, all the ways I've imagined and had nightmares about, wouldn't that be the worst? Poisoned by the air mix. Dead without realizing it. Van Tull nodded over at Darrow, who was doing a walk round of his Thunderbolt.
Lad did well yesterday, didn't he? Fine debut.
Yeah, said Markwell. He was deciding whether or not he needed to dash to the latrine to vomit. He'll be fine. They all will.
You've changed your bloody tune,
said Ranfrey, joining them. Markwell shrugged.
Just hoping for the best, I think. I hope they'll be fine, because if they're not, we're all screwed.
Viltry buttoned up his flight coat and adjusted his gauntlets. He saw Jagdeer approaching.
Anything?
He asked. She shook her head.
Look, Bree, he began. There's something I...
What? He smiled.
No, now's not the time. I'll talk to you later.
Jagdeer nodded. She passed through the waiting pilots. Zemek was sitting on a camp chair, counting off his chain of charms, one by one, over and over. Cordial and Delruth were playing knuckles to take their mind off the tension.
All set, you two?
Jagdeer asked.
Yes, ma'am,
said Aggie Delruth. She had such an appealing smile. Not what a man might call a pretty woman, Jagdeer thought. Too stern in the face, too heavy in the jaw. Delruth was what Jagdeer's father had liked to call comely.
Cordial?
Cordial grinned and patted his lapel.
Got my lucky feather, Commander.
Sculter was chatting to Blanche, asking him some technical question about fuel pumps.
He seemed calm enough. Pretty stable, that man, Jagdeer thought. Kaminsky was standing alone, staring out of the hangar mouth at the slowly lightening sky. Are you set? She asked as she came to stand beside him.
I think so,
he said. Just do your best, she said.
I've been waiting a long time for a chance to do just that, mademoiselle,
Kaminsky replied. He held out his left hand.
I never did thank you properly for this opportunity.
She shook his hand. It seemed odd to do it left-handed, but she knew he didn't want to use his dull prosthetic. I never thank you for getting me out of Theda, she said. Shall we call it even? He smiled. What do you think? She asked.
Everyone's scared, said Kaminsky. That's what I think. It's natural, I suppose. Frankly, I can't wait.
He didn't have to. The klaxons began to howl. Over the midwinters, 0539. Umbra flight cleared the dock and began to rise in formation, burners bright. Every other hangar bay in Lucerna spat out its flights. 72 Thunderbolts darted up from the island plateau, which was now glowing pink in the rising daylight. Operations chatter was constant. All along the archipelago, the air bases were launching en masse. Squadrons were snapping up from Limbus, Zophos, and the major islands, and also from the northern coast and the Ingeborg stations. From carriers on the littoral and the peninsula, a broad and solid Auspex return had manifested. Jagdeer had indeed tempted fate. It seemed like everything the archenemy had was coming for them. Climb to 8, Umbra. Hold formation. Make your speed 2.5, they called in. The sky was 4/10 cloud, and there was a strong northerly that would aid the enemy's approach speed. Everyone tight, she called.
Leader, this is 8. I've got an engine warning.
Can you sort it, Markwell? In his cockpit, Markwell fiddled with the throttle. His port engine kept misfiring, juddering double eagle.
Trying now, lead.
The engine stuttered, and then died altogether. 9-9 wobbled back out of the line.
Umbra 8, please advise status.
Engine out,
Markwell said. He pressed restart once, twice, nothing.
Leader, engine is definitely out.
Peel off, 8. Get home and get it fixed. You're no good to me running on 1.
Copy that, he said and dived away.
Snuggle up, flight, she said.
1 down already, and they hadn't even fired a shot yet. The Auspex started showing a mass of contacts at 50 kilometers. She fiddled with her gain control. It couldn't be that massive. But it was. Auspex assessed overlapping bomber streams, 500 units in each.
Holy throne of Earth, she murmured.
Umbra flight, this is lead. Mass targets at 50 kilometer. Climb to 10,000 and let's go in onto them. Targets for all.
Copy that lead,
voxed Blanchard, and the planes began to climb. Darrow adjusted his air mix and stuck to Van Tull's 8. He could feel the pulse in his wrists against the tight strapping of his gloves. He toggled his guns on and off to make sure he got a green rune. The vox channels started going mad. Via operations, they were getting the first reports of contacts. At St. Hagen, the Sea of Ezra, the Festus Delta, Navy flights had encountered vast waves of arch-enemy bombers and their fighter support. Monumental air battles were now igniting over the Ziphonian Sea.
5 kilometers and closing, Jagdeer called. Hold steady. Keep scanning for fighters.
High altitude seemed empty by visual and Auspex, but there was a huge mass of returns from the lower level.
Could there be that many machines in the air, wondered Darrow, or was his Auspex faulty?
Umbra flight, weapons live, sights on, targets below at 4,000, stoop and sting.
The Thunderbolts peeled off and went into their attack dives. Nose down, reaching maximum velocity, Darrow saw the clouds stream away. Below them, the bombers. His Auspex had not lied. The air was studded with mass bomber formations.
Attacking,
Jagdeer voxed. The air lit up. Festoons of tracer streams hosed up from the enemy formation, filling the air. Darrow felt the thump and bang of close detonations rattle his bird. The dive was intense. Pick one, he thought. Pick one, you bloody fool, or you'll just go through them. Explosions blossomed below. 2 or 3 of the bombers in visual range had gone up. He chose one, a massive thing, bright red, with 4 wings and 8 vector engines. He had no idea what pattern it was. It was the size of a Nanero, at least. Its multiple bolter turrets ripped up at him, and he felt a solid hit against 1 wing. Diving vertically onto it, he opened fire. His las cannons lit up. The huge machine's dorsal plating ruptured and burst apart. Darrow realized he was diving so steeply and so hard he was going to impact into the back of it. He tried to pull out,
Velocity had frozen his stick. He fired again and again. Hit, hit, hit. The enormous bomber blew up. A fat, hot torus of flame, out of which little white tendrils of smoke spat and trickled. Darrow shot through the flames and out under the formation. If the bomber hadn't exploded, he would surely have collided with it. He fought to raise the nose. It was a huge effort. He gripped the way Jagda had taught him, but still nearly blacked out from the G. His bird climbed, the stick looser. He saw Skulter's machine whirl past, chasing down another of the massive superbombers. Skulter's sustained shooting dropped it into the sea. Darrow ascended, nursing the throttle. Perspiration was pouring down his face and making his mask itch. He blinked the sweat drops out of his eyes. His targeter pinged as another of the super heavies filled his sights. Bright blue bolter rounds cindered down around him from the belly guns. He viffed up, adjusted to the right, and gave the thing four bursts of las. It lost a wing. The damage caused the huge craft to wallow and then invert suddenly. It was on fire by the time it hit the water. Jagdia killed a tormentor on her way down, and another on her way back up. Las batteries drained. She wound over onto a heavy bomber and switched to quad. She gave it a few bursts, but its turrets forced her to back off. To her left, she saw Zemek make a kill, and Del Ruth zoom over, chasing a tormentor that had broken from formation, wounded. Jagdia kicked her rudder bar and rolled down under the heavy. Viltry had been telling her about the sweet spot, the point that no turret could track. Two rounds went through her tail armor before she was sure she'd found it. She chattered quad fire into the beast's stomach. It slumped to port, dropping out of its line, making hot smoke, and exploding long before it reached the sea. With Blanchard to his port, Kaminsky dropped in on a tormentor, letting it come wide into his gunsight. It had been a long time since he'd felt this right. "Fire!" he said. "Fire! Fire!" The las cannons charged and unloaded. The tormentor broke like an eggshell and fell into a tumble.
"One to you, Kaminsky,"
Blanchard voxed.
"Yeah," he thought. "One to me."
Viltry followed Ranfrey and Cordial down through the chaos of shots and wafting smoke. He rolled right and got a lock on a talon that was attempting to climb. Before he could commit to shoot, he saw stripes of fire coming up from below. He rolled and looked down. The air below was full of bats, ascending, shooting. The bomber waves had escort all right, but low, not top cover. "Bats, bats, bats," he yelled. 6 o'clock and coming up vertical." Lucerna AB, 0601. Floundering on one engine, Markwell came into Hangar 3 and set down. He did it badly, denting the deck plating and slewing hard, leaving deep gouges from his landing claws. The fitters ran to 99. Markwell clambered out, throwing off his helmet in disgust.
"Sir?"
asked Rackley.
"Damage?"
"No, no, it's the bloody port engine. She's cut out on me." Furious, Markwell kicked his helmet across the deckway.
"We're on it, sir,"
Rackley said, running to open the cover. "Just fix it, bloody fix it," Markwell yelled at them. Rackley stopped and turned, dignified.
"We're trying, sir," he said.
Markwell saw the look on his chief fitter's face. He raised his hands for calm.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I'm really sorry, Rackley. It's just I should be out there. I should be engaged. It's this bloody jinx. The jinx of 99. It's frigging with me, and..."
"There's no jinx," said Rackley, sharply. "Why don't you shut up, boy? Always blaming your failures on something. Your fellow flyers, the pilots who score better than you, your jinxed plane. Anything, just so long as it isn't you. Wake up. Look closer to home and start doing something about it, or by the throne, I'll lamp you with a wrench myself."
Markwell stuttered and took a step back. Rackley turned away.
"Cruz," he yelled, "get this bloody bird airworthy now."
Over the Midwinters, 06:15. The razors and locusts swept up amongst them, trying to force them away from the monstrous bomber formation. Kaminsky decided he wasn't having that. He banked over and went to meet the fighters head-on.
"Umbra 5, where the hell are you going?"
Blanchard yelled over the channel. Kaminsky didn't say anything except,
"Fire! Fire! Fire! Fire!"
Blanchard followed him down through the fire-streaked air. He saw a razor vibrating as it fell away, bleeding smoke. He saw a locust blow out as it climbed. Kaminsky was plowing into them with deliberate, single-minded fury. Blanchard pulled in beside Kaminsky's port, took a shot at a rising locust, then banked out as he saw a crimson razor turning close. The razor was looping to line up on Kaminsky. Blanchard took him with the last three bursts of his las. Switching to quad, he barreled down. Kaminsky had lined up on a locust and was peppering it with lasfire. Cordial and Del Ruth rushed past, gunning at three locusts that had turned away in a harsh dive. He saw a razor going across him, viffed his bolt to get deflection, and ripped the hostile down its length with quad rounds. Kaminsky came up out of his long stoop and locked a locust.
Fire!
Nothing. His las batteries were exhausted.
Switch! Fire! Fire!
The quads burst off at an empty sky. Kaminsky soared around and found a bomber right ahead of him.
Fire! Fire! Fire!
The bomber tilted and began to come around. Several engines out, it was turning back for home.
Fire! Fire!
Kaminsky said. The stricken bomber went down, suddenly encased in a shroud of its own burning fuel. Bats blazed up past Kaminsky. He rolled over to greet them. Two thunderbolt wings and a formation of lightnings had now converged on their air brawl. Jagdeer had taken a hit to her rudder, and 01 wasn't steering very well, but she tanked out of the fuselage three locusts were laying on her, bent right, and hammered another tormentor to fragments. Her fuel load was getting low. The rest of Umbra would be the same, unless they hadn't been doing their jobs right. Umbra flight, prepare to turn for home. Refuel run. Rearm. Come back. Del Ruth, Cordial, and Zemek quickly acknowledged. Then Darrow, Sculter, and Van Tull. Viltry's affirmative came in a moment later. Umbra 2, she called.
Heard you. Coming out,
Blancher replied. Umbra 5, Kaminsky.
Understood, leader. Fuel is low. Breaking off.
Umbra 12. Umbra 12. Ramfrey, copy me. She looked around, scanning the packed sky for some sign of Ramfrey. Far below, unseen by Jagdeer, a thunderbolt descended. Ranfrey's bird had sailed through the shot storm of the bomber pack. Every bolt round blasted out by the turrets had missed it, except the one that had shattered its canopy and burst Ranfrey's skull. His thunderbolt, uncontrolled, slowly dropped away and hit the sea. Lucerna AB, 0813. The flight came in through the south entry of the hangar. Del Ruth's machine was making smoke, and Jagdeer's rudder was flapping like a weather vane. Refit, rearm, and refuel, Jagdeer yelled to the fitter crews. Power loaders and tank trucks were already spurring toward the vapor-swathed machines. Where's Markwell? Jagdeer yelled to Rackley over the noise.
He was here, ma'am. We fixed him up. He's gone up again.
Promethium jetted out of a hose poorly fitted to Cordial's machine. Rackley ran towards the problem, cursing his crew. Jagdeer looked up out of the hangar mouth at the sky. Markwell was alone out there. Over the midwinters, 0845. The sky was lit up by the fight. Markwell took a deep breath. It was amazing. He'd never seen so many air machines in combat before. He put 99 into a dive and came in on a pack of locusts, 30 strong. He didn't care. Effortlessly, he rolled into them and fired the moment he had a tone lock. One of the small arch-enemy fighters bucked, then flew apart in a dazzle of heat.
Three!
Markwell whooped to himself.
Three! Frigging three!
The locust pack broke and looped. Suddenly, they were all over him. He took three holes in the port wing, two in the starboard, and four through the tail. Gasping, Markwell turned out high, trying to evade. The locusts swarmed after him. He saw a flash, a passing glint. Eight thunderbolts, painted cream, streaked down past him into the locust swarm. The Apostles. Throne of Earth, the Apostles. Larice, he whispered. Holy terror, those Apostles were punishing the locusts hard. Perfect timing, perfect formation. They blitzed into the pack and killed most of them in one pass. So fast, Markwell felt almost stationary, even though the speed gauge said he was topping 800. Larice! Larice Ash, he called. Who's that? Snapped a hard voice. Umbra 8, he said. Markwell, Empress Teeth, this is no time for reunions. Get your ass out of here. Copy that, Larice. I'm going. Get the hell gone, and don't call me that. I am Apostle 5. Over the midwinters, 0918. Blancher led up the first four bolts that were ready. Van Tull, Cordial, Sculter, and Zemek. The others would follow under Jagdeer the moment her rudder was fixed. Blancher turned them southwest, in the direction of Theda. Another wing of eight thunderbolts that had just turned round at Lucerna launched and fell into step with them. Ahead, it seemed like a great storm had slid down across the horizon. There was a wide brown cliff of smoke along the sea, extending as far as Blancher could see,
filled with sparks and flashes like lightning. As they closed, the cliff began to resolve. What he'd been seeing was the glare distortion of thousands of exhaust plumes and engine fires, ribboned into a lattice across the sky, so dense that from a distance it seemed solid. They passed several Imperial machines limping for home. Blanchard kept calling for Markwell. The Vox was still burbling with hundreds of intersecting transmissions. According to operations, the massive clash they were prosecuting here was matched by a vast battle over the Sea of Ezra and another near the east coast approaching Ingeborg. Other reports said that bomber streams had got past the midwinter line and were beginning to hit Zophos and even the northern shore. Every available Imperial machine was now aloft on at least its second sortie of the day. Contacts were closing, a large pack of Hell Talons cruising north.
Umbra flight, he ordered. Engage!
Over the midwinters, 0950. It had taken an age for the fitters to fix Jagdir's rudder. Even now, Hemon had warned it wasn't a solid repair. She ascended at maximum speed, tailed by Del Ruth, Kaminsky, Viltry, and Darrow. It was no longer a matter of getting track instruction from operations. The sky above the archipelago was loaded with machines everywhere she looked. They picked up a quartet of marauders, all damaged, that were being harried by a formation of 9 blue locusts. The bats seemed to move as one, skilled and disciplined, as if they were somehow controlled by one fierce mind. Jagdir rolled the wing into them. One of the marauders was finally overwhelmed and went down towards the atolls. It was hard to keep a focus on the brawl at hand. Parts of other dogfight clashes kept impinging as the edges of one skirmish overlapped another. Umbra was rolling with the blue locusts when 7 lightnings blundered into their fight zone, tumbling around 3 pairs of razors. Jagdir found herself having to deal with one of the razor pairs, which switched from the lightnings they'd been chasing onto her. Any semblance of strategic formation in Umbra vanished. Darrow turned tightly over one of the ailing marauders and locked onto a yellow hellraiser that seemed to be either confused or suffering from vector damage. He led his shot, expecting it to break left, but it didn't, or it couldn't. As a result, Darrow's first burst missed. He banked to the right, floating the machine into his reticule and fired again, killing it instantly. Kaminsky and Viltry had been forced to the eastern part of the skirmish, separated from the others by the razors going through their midst. They found themselves mugged by all 9 of the blue locusts. Both of them began turning and firing, and the blue bats danced away like a shoal of fish, triggered by a single impulse. They switched and came around again, almost in line. Kaminsky broke hard, and Viltry executed a savage vector-assisted turn, representing so the locusts were almost head-on to him. He got a good but momentary lock on the lead plane and fired his quads, leaving his thumb on the stud so that the salvo would rake. The first locust blew out, and because they were running tight, in line, Viltry's target lock carried his bombardment onto the second one, which also disintegrated. Then Viltry had to bank abruptly to avoid the others. Something blinked past over his canopy, and he saw Kaminsky coming in on a barrel roll into the thick of them, forcing the locusts to lose cohesion for the first time. Kaminsky hit one, then damaged a second, and hunted a third round at its 6. The blue bat was so eager to avoid the thunderbolt on its tail that it ran blindly across Viltry's field of fire, and he stung it with his las cannons. Kaminsky and Viltry scissored past each other, their pack cut in half, the locusts pulled out. Over the midwinters, 10-10. Blanche's element flew out of their tangle and enjoyed a brief respite of quiet air before a vast swirl of fighting planes engulfed them from above. They were forced low, then lower still. Burning engine parts, wing fragments, and pieces of elevator rained past them from craft destroyed in the upper levels of the brawl. One large fragment bounced off Sculter's nose, destroying his las battery and stripping the cover plating off his starboard turbofan. He cried out in alarm and fought with the controls to steady the plane. Peering forward, he could see energy from the split las cables crackling and sparkling on the dented nose. He deactivated the power magazine and switched to quad.
Umbra 7, pay attention! Blanchard yelled.
Sculter had been so intent on his damage that he'd been flying straight for too long. A mauve Hell Talon came sweeping down out of the frothing smoke wash above and started to fire. Sculter sat down in his armor plating, flinching as the shots went by. He seemed to have frozen. Blanchard was too committed to a pair of razors to help him. Cordial came out of the north, firing heavily. The Talon took a hit or two in its rear armor and forgot all about Sculter. It dropped low, towards the sea, running to escape. Cordial stormed after it. They went across the water at less than 10 meters, kicking up wash and spray with their thrusters.
the Talon slipped back and forth around atolls and cliffs, determined not to climb and thus make itself a target. Cordial stuck to it, banking as it banked, slicing around islets and surface rocks. They came around a tall, sheer cliff in a hard turn, the noise of their engines reflecting oddly off the cliff face, and immediately had to leapfrog two mass barges lying at anchor in the cove. Cordial missed the vox masts of the big tubs by centimeters. The Talon rushed low across the basin, chased by Hydra batteries along the beach, and bent right around the shoreline of the atoll. Cordial steered after it, standing his plane on its starboard wing. He laughed as he saw that their passing rush had caused seabirds to take off in panic out of the rocks. The Talon twisted to port, skimming over a pattern of low, semi-submerged islets. Following, Cordial heard the lock tone and fired. The Talon lurched and plunged nose down into the rocks, detonating with huge force. Cordial shot past it, glancing back at the fireball gleefully. Traveling at 700 kilometers an hour, his plane tore into another flock of startled seabirds erupting from the low rocks. Each one weighed a kilo or more, and they shredded his nose cone and front plating like jackhammers. Two annihilated his right engine, and one punched through his canopy, shattered the gun sight, and hit him square in the face, driving his goggles into his skull and snapping his neck instantly. Umbra 11 hit the outer line of the rocks and disintegrated in a blizzard of hull plates, cables, and machine parts. Over the Midwinters, 10:45. Swinging wide for home, Jagdeer's flight had come up on a Tormentor wing that had broken from the thicker fighting and was heading towards the Sea of Ezra. They harried it until their tanks were too low. Gaining altitude for Lucerna, they sighted Markwell. Umbra 8, Jagdeer voxed. Where the hell have you been? Not really sure, lead, Markwell responded. But wherever it was, there was an awful lot of planes there. Lucerna AB, 11:30. Turn them around as quickly as you can, Jagdeer said as she jumped down. Her four had brought Markwell back with them. According to operations chatter, Blanche's element was 5 minutes away.
Yes, ma'am,
Rackley replied. Smoke was coming out from under Kaminsky's machine, and Rackley yelled at a deck crewman to get it doused. Turning back to Jagdeer, he indicated the trolleys of ammunition at the hangar side, waiting to be loaded.
We've not got the whole of our last order, Commander, he said. I've called down to the base arsenal, and they told me we're draining the magazines. This morning so far they've fetched up as much as they would usually in 8 days.
They'll have to work harder, Jagdeer said.
It's not that, Mamzel. The magazines are actually emptying. They're having to pull munition supplies that came in on the barges and haven't been unloaded yet. It's slowing things down.
I'll go and put in a good word, Jagdeer said, heading for the briefing rooms. As she walked, she turned round and shouted, Pilots, make sure you all, I repeat all, get some fluid inside yourselves. Maybe a little food, too, if you can stomach it, but not too much. Fluid is a necessity.
Markwell dismounted and took a water bottle that one of his fitters offered him. He spat out the first mouthful, trying to get rid of the thick taste of rubber his mask had left in his mouth.
Running better?
Rackley asked. Markwell nodded. Look, I want to apologize for... Rackley shook his head.
Least said, soonest mended, sir.
I got my third, Markwell said. The chief fitter grinned and clapped him on the shoulder.
There, you see. What jinx?
In the briefing room, Jagdeer got on the vox to the armourers and had to listen while someone told her the same story she'd heard from Rackley.
Just take a look up at the sky and see if that helps you any, she said, and hung up.
While she'd been making the call, Jagdeer had been gazing across at the main auspects. It looked more like the climate plot of a tropical storm than aircraft tracking. Viltry came in, put down his helmet, and came to look at the screen too.
Operations say they're breaking off, Viltry said.
Operations can kiss my ass, they're not up there.
No.
Viltry pointed to the southern sections of the display.
I can sort of see what they mean. Overall. That was a huge wave pattern they threw at us at dawn. The sky may be full of machines and plenty of fighting, but a lot of that's involving hostiles that are turning back for home, fuel out, or coming back from target if they made it. This whole area here, see?
He tapped a section east of Zophos.
That's all medium bombers. All going south. The actual wave has broken.
The first wave, Jagdeer said. A mass onslaught like this is all or nothing. They'll be coming again as soon as they've rearmed and refueled.
Viltry nodded.
Of course. I have a feeling they're going to keep this up until they've crushed us. The archenemy is many things. Subtle is not on the list.
Very true, said Jagdeer. We go up as soon as we can, hunt stragglers, and steal some altitude before the second mass comes in.
I'll see if Rackley can scare up some rockets,
Viltry said.
You'll be lucky, Jagdeer laughed.
But with rockets, we could seek out a mass carrier and have a go. I don't care how many bats they've got, they can't refit and refuel without a carrier.
Yes, said Jagdeer.
She looked up at the logboard that the fitters were keeping. Times of launch, times home, damage, work done. Ranfrey's logline was ominously blank.
Ranfrey?
Viltry asked, guessing what she was thinking. She nodded.
Hasn't been seen since about 6:30. Even flying to conserve fuel, there's no way he's still in the air.
Maybe he put down at another base, said Viltry. Or ejected. Or...
She appreciated Viltry was trying. She picked up a stylus and wrote missing next to Ranfrey's name.
It's something I've been thinking about a lot in the last few days,
Viltry said quietly.
You know, death, I mean.
You and everyone else, said Jagdeer.
He shook his head.
No, in particular. As far as the Imperium is concerned, Oscar Viltry is dead. I'm just a scrap of paper, a pending number to be assigned.
So?
Will you promise me something, Bree?
Yes, she said immediately.
You haven't heard what it is yet. I'm here, at your side, proud to be a member of Umbra, and that's how it'll be until the end.
I know, she said.
Few men were as loyal and committed as Oscar Viltry.
But when this is done, when we win this fight, I don't mean today, I mean however long it takes, will you forget you ever saw me?
What are you talking about? She laughed.
Then she saw in his eyes he was entirely serious. Viltry took the paper registration docket the Munitorum had given him out of his pocket and smoothed it flat.
Forget you ever knew that Oscar Viltry came back from the desert and flew with you. List this pending number as missing in action. Let me disappear here, on Enothis, when the fighting's done.
She blinked.
Is that what you want, Viltry?
Yes. Not just me. There's someone...
He paused.
There will be lives to be rebuilt here, after the war.
She thought about it for a moment, then picked up the paper.
I promise, she said.
Out in the hangar, as the fitters worked feverishly, Darrow sat in silence, his back against the wall. His hands were no longer shaking. They were completely steady. What was shaking now was inside him, some deep core part that had been rocked and rattled and squeezed and slammed and wrenched. In one morning, no clear image remained to him of the day's fighting, just a blur, a smell of fuel and physoline, a sound of thunder. Nearby, he heard some of the ground crew cheering as they added a third stripe to Markwell's plane. Markwell looked triumphant. Even in the short time he'd known him, Darrow had been able to tell that Markwell was desperate for glory. Darrow thought for a moment and realized to his shame that he couldn't precisely remember how many kills he'd got himself. He tried to picture them all, the fluke the day before, then the bombers. He realized that his tally was now 5. He was an ace. Darrow decided not to tell Markwell. Buzzers sounded. Blanche's element came in at last, shrieking down through the north entry. Darrow leapt up. He saw immediately how damaged the snout of Skulter's plane was. Skulter himself seemed all right, but dazed. Jagdeer ran out to inspect the damage.
Lad's system's completely shot, said the lead fitter. It will take hours to mount in a new system. We can replace the plating quick enough, but if you want him up again, you'll have to make do with quads.
Then he'll have to make do, Jagdeer said. She glanced round as Blanche, Van Tull, and Zemek plodded across from their machines. She froze. In her concern for Skulter and his bird, she'd missed the obvious.
Where's Cordial? She asked.
Millen Blanche shook his head. Over the Sea of Ezra, 13:16. The second wave rolled in an hour after noon. Though the day was bright, the pollution of the morning's combat had now stained the sky with a strange, yellowish opacity. Volcanic columns of smoke rose from Theda, Ezraville, and Limbus, visible for hundreds of kilometers. Umbra was already up. So were all the other wings from Lucerna, Viper Atoll, and the other midwinter bases. The tech mages had blessed their craft and sent them on their way. Umbra climbed high to about 15,000 and formed two packs, Jagdeer with Viltry, Darrow, Delruth, and Markwell,
and Blanchard leading Skalter, Kaminsky, Zemek, and Van Tull. Once again, the ominous track on the Auspex showed the tide of arch-enemy air power rolling north. Jagdeer had heard a flight controller estimate that at the peak of the morning's activity, the Imperial planes had been outnumbered 11-1. She wondered how the kill rates had compared. Reserves had been added. Commonwealth units were mobilized now after the morning's surprise, and had their machines, mostly pulse jets and reciprocating engine birds, standing ready in fields along the northern coast, a last-ditch defense. Those old craft wouldn't stand a chance against the arch-enemy's vector planes, Jagdeer knew. The point was, if the enemy wave reached the north coast in any numbers, nothing mattered anymore, anyway. That morning, despite terrible losses, the Navy wings had denied the bulk of the enemy wave. The north coast had been hit, but not with the full fury the onslaught had threatened. Now it was round two. Tactics had changed. Now spearhead groups of fighters were storming ahead of the bomber strings to disrupt the Navy interceptors and prevent them from flashing the bombers. Jagdeer saw condensation trails crawling out. The bats were clocking in at maximum thrust, lashing forward to meet the Imperial line. Air flashes lit up to east and west. The first contacts had been made. Operations traffic suddenly became frenetic. Umbra's scopes showed a fighter group, nearly 30 strong, coming in at 12,000.
"They're moving bloody fast," muttered Zemek.
"Let's slow them down," said Jagdeer. In the paired packs, Umbra stooped and began to fire as soon as the racing bats were in range. They were a squadron of locusts, some maroon, some yellow, some gold, and they broke upwards into Umbra's attack. Viltry killed a bat head-on, but Jagdeer picked up two that refused to let her go. Darrow and Delruth almost converged and managed to smack las shots into the same hostile, chopping it into fragments. Markwell avoided getting his tail shot off in the first pass, then climbed hard again to help Jagdeer. The two maroon locusts had locked down on her despite her violent slips and turns. Any tighter, and she risked a high-speed stall.
"Can't shake them,"
Jagdeer snarled, gripped tight against the lousy G.
"Umbra leader, speed brakes, and drop out,"
Markwell yelled as he came howling in. Vision closing into a grey tunnel, Jagdeer deployed the speed brakes into the slipstream and slammed violently back out under the still-turning locusts. Immediately, she started to recover with vector thrust. Markwell came in over her guns, firing, and the locusts swung out of his way with some haste. One darted up out of sight, but the other went into a dive, and Markwell committed after it. The pilots in Blanche's half of the flight all made kills within 20 seconds, though Van Tull was himself hit and took wing damage.
"You okay, three?"
Blanche called.
4A,
came the expected response. Blanche could hear Kaminsky distinctly over the link.
"Fire! Fire! Fire! Switch! Fire!"
As he came up, mushing off speed, Blanche looked up and saw Kaminsky's plane flick roll, quads firing, and make his second kill of the sortie. The remaining bats retreated. Markwell came back up from his chase empty-handed. Umbra reformed and immediately sighted the front edge of the bomber wave, low and south of them. They scoped more fighter escorts. They began their attack run anyway. Over the Sea of Ezra, 1402. The batteries of the mass formation opened up as the fighters stooped in amongst them. In the flat yellow light, the bombers looked like a mezzo-tint image. Four Thunderbolt wings were now attacking this gigantic string, and two more were dueling with its razor escorts. Viltry's anti-bomber expertise earned him two stings straight off, and Jagdeer followed his example, damaging a heavy raider that Delruth polished off in her wake. Darrow found a Tormentor and blew away part of its engine assembly. It hung in the air for a second, then pitched away as if it had fainted. Delruth did a split S, then swooped onto a Super Heavy that was dark red like carrion. Chains fluttered out behind the huge machine, and Delruth realized they were strung with human skulls. She banked in, not even waiting for the sights to lock. It would have been difficult to miss. She put 8 pulses of lasfire into the swollen flank, and, as she pulled away, saw the aluminoid skin shred and burst as fuel-air explosions blew it apart from within. Even as the giant craft died and burned, its turrets kept firing. Delruth felt her bird shudder as something hit the underside of her nose with huge force, tearing the stick out of her hands for a moment and knocking the plane's attitude through 20 degrees. She recovered control.
6, are you okay?
Yes, leader,
Delruth responded. She checked her instruments and saw 2 warning lights lit, indicating damage to the starboard autoloaders.
Hit, but not critical.
Kaminsky and Zemek had both taken out bombers on the first pass,
but Blanchard, Sculter, and Van Tull were intercepted by the Razor escort before they could do any harm. Van Tull had to fly an almost complete figure of eight before he shook a purple Razor, then almost immediately got the drop on another, checkered black and white, that had lined up on Sculter. As the checkered hostile vaporized, Sculter peeled away towards a heavy bomber, firing on it from its seven. The purple Razor that Van Tull had shaken reappeared, swooping steeply and opening fire on Sculter's machine. Bolt rounds sliced down into the starboard engine, the midsection, and the tail, shredding part of the rudder. The impacts destroyed Sculter's Auspex, ruptured his coolant system, and crazed the side screens of his canopy white.
"Umbra 7! Umbra 7!" Van Tull yelled.
Dazed, Sculter heard the voice and looked around. The air of his cockpit was full of blue smoke. He stared at the shattered instruments. The few panels still functioning were a mass of warning lights. Overheat, leak, pressure loss, power failure.
"Sculter, can you hear me?"
Sculter looked down and let out a sob. At least one of the rounds had gone clean through his lower torso. He couldn't believe the bloody mess was anything to do with him. He couldn't feel his legs. He couldn't feel anything much at all.
"Sculter!"
"Poor A," he whispered. "Taken a little damage."
"Seven, if you're not flyable, eject for throne's sake!"
With effort, Sculter touched the stick. It was dead. Slack, all control gone. His ruined machine was just flying straight. He looked down again. There was no way he could eject. No point, either. He looked up. The heavy bomber he'd been targeting was still ahead, cruising on. Sculter put his hand on the throttle.
"For Enophis and the Emperor," he murmured, and pushed the throttle open.
Umbra 7 accelerated in a straight, unswerving line and hit the heavy bomber in the port ribs. A huge halo of flames engulfed them both.
"Seven's gone! Sculter's gone!"
Markwell could hear Van Tull yelling. Negative G was preventing him from replying. He was cranking round in a murderous loop with a mauve Razor on his back. He felt hits skinning off his armor. He banked hard, a bone-shaking shudder, and managed to force the Razor to fly past under him. Now he was behind it. It would break at any second, Markwell knew. But which way? Which way would you go? Jagdir had always told them. Markwell went right, and the Razor did just that in the same instant. Target lock. Markwell was screaming as he fired. He knew it was a kill before Double Eagle had even started firing. The mauve Hellraiser started to spin, then spiraled away like a leaf. Markwell hoped someone had seen that. He dearly hoped that someone...
"Umbra 6! Umbra 6! Status!"
Jagdir started shouting over the vox. There was no obvious hostile on her, but Del Ruth Thunderbolt looked like it was taking hits to the nose. Explosive crackles rocked her airframe, and plating blew out.
"I don't know,"
she began. It was the hit she'd taken in the autoloaders just minutes before. Overheated damage or a late detonating round wedged into the mechanism had explosively cooked off the drums of ammunition. The rippling blasts were her own shells exploding in the caissons. In horror, Jagdir saw several detonate up through the main hull, blowing out both sets of engine pipes, and another flurry wrecked her radiator. Mortally wounded, the Thunderbolt began to dive.
"Aggie, pull out! Pull out!"
Jagdir yelled.
"I can't! Negative! Dead stick!"
Del Ruth screamed back.
"Eject, Aggie, for throne's sake, eject!"
The machine plunged away. Jagdir saw a flash of glitter and a shape in the air. Far below her, a chute opened, a tiny dot against the tungsten sea. Lucerna AB, 1520. As they refueled and reloaded, no one spoke much. Fatigue and nerves had almost wrung them out, but the losses made it much worse. Their hearts ached as much as their joints. For most of the pilots, circulation and balance were seriously impaired. Just walking around the hangar was difficult. Just before 1600, as they were preparing to launch, operations reported that the second wave had broken short of Zophos. Fought to a near standstill after 4 hours, the arch-enemy formations had turned back. If a third wave was intended, they'd see it within the next 5 hours.
"Third time lucky," said Zemek.
"Who for?"
asked Kaminsky. Over the midwinters, 1823. They came back early, as if hungry, somehow sensing that they had their enemy on the ropes. Or desperate. That's what Jagdir told herself. The third wave came out over the coast in the early and unnatural dusk, seemingly just as immense as before. How could they have shot down so many of the bastards, and there be so little sign of a thinning in their ranks?
The remaining 8 machines of Umbra flight climbed, with 4 other Thunderbolt squadrons, to 9,000, and circled in over the archipelago as the enemy formations approached. The other bases had put up their wings. The line was drawn. Combat began at 1845. Another new tactic was immediately revealed. Frustrated by the Navy's staunch resistance, the archenemy had committed the front elements of its bomber waves low to pattern bomb the islands in the hope of annihilating the hidden bases there. From its overall heading, this arm of the wave was intending to cross the Straits of Jabez and target Tamuda once the islands were done. The radiant ripples of furious detonations began to light up the southern part of the island chain. The Imperial planes went in amongst the bombers, cutting them out of the air even as they dropped their warloads. "I don't see fighters," Markwell called.
"There'll be fighters," Blanchard said.
Darrow made his 8th kill of the day, then throttled up to join Viltry in an attack on a super heavy. The tracer patterns were torrential and bright in the stale air. Jagdia turned in tight. She couldn't see Zemek or Van Tull in the mayhem, but she could hear them over the link. Blanchard and Kaminsky were attacking a trio of tormentors. She was about to start a run onto a Hell Talon when she saw the escort bats coming in across them.
"Bats, 20+, 2 o'clock,
Jagdia yelled. They were razors, black and red, a few bright crimson, one pearl white. The killer and his circus came on. 2 of his wingmen attacked and destroyed a pair of Navy Thunderbolts from the 96th, who didn't react anything like fast enough.
"Umbra, split, split,"
Jagdia ordered, and opened her throttle, going for the pearl leader. His evasive roll left her wrong-footed, but she turned hard and tried to get on his tail. He refused to sit, vectoring to port and coming up underneath her. Desperately, she flick-rolled and dropped down around him to his right, but he turned off sharply to port. For a moment, she wondered if she had actually scared him into a break, but then saw in dismay that he'd simply been lining her up for his 2 crimson wingmen. Serial 02 shuddered as laser bolts went through its wings. Jagdia slammed the stick over and tried to barrel under the razors, but they were as agile as their master and stuck tight to her tail.
"Throne of Earth!"
Jagdia cursed, fighting to break out. Moving far too fast for such close quarters, she almost rammed a Hell Talon and bled speed miserably as she was forced to duck under it. Another shot clipped her tail fin. 2 more ripped through the sensor clusters, and her Auspex screen flickered and died. She vectored, came round stubbornly, and started to climb between a pair of tormentors that lashed at her with their weapon mounts. Viltry saw her plight. He pulled away from the super heavy he had just crippled and lit his burners, spearing down through the bomber formation into the denser smoke.
"Jagdia, come left," he called.
She turned, but the crimson bats would not let her go. Viltry fired on them and tucked in. He couldn't get a lock. He wasn't going to get them in time. Blanchard and Kaminsky left the bombers alone and stooped after Jagdia too. Kaminsky saw the pearl-white bat first. It seemed to come out of the vapor of Physaline smoke like a specter, gun pods flickering. Umbra 2 wrenched violently as gaping wounds punched into its tailplane.
"Blanchard!"
Kaminsky yelled. Blanchard tried to viff, tried to shake it just the way he had taught Kaminsky, but his vector ports were damaged. The white bat fired again, a stream of illuminated shells, and a spray of flames sheathed Blanchard's entire tail. The shots had penetrated the tanks of the Thunderbolt's rocket motor, and the hypergolic propellants had ignited. The huge thread of flame was greenish-white with intense heat. Blanchard started to dive. Ignoring the white killer, Kaminsky scream-dived after Umbra 2. Blanchard's plane was now on fire from nose to tail.
"Get out! Get out! Millen, inject!" "Can't! I can't! Canopy's jammed! Blanchard!"
The Thunderbolt no longer resembled a plane. It fell like a comet, a meteor, an attenuated ball of fire, almost too bright to look at. But diving with it, Kaminsky could not look away. He knew fire. He knew the terror of a burning plane all too well. Blanchard started screaming. The fire was inside the cockpit now. The voice on the Vox no longer seemed human. Kaminsky was strangely relieved when the Inferno hit the sea. Obokon watched with curiosity as the Imperial's wingman made the strange choice to follow his burning leader down. How odd. As if there was anything he could do. It rendered the wingman an extraordinarily easy target. Obokon turned into a dive, feeling the grav armor clench around his body and the cardio centrifuges throb. He blinked to settle the gunsight focus and put the orange pipper on the wingman's tail. Attention. Target found. Just a little more.
A warning sounded. Obercon glanced up and instinctively raised his nose, losing the target immediately. Shots stripped past him.
"Someone's eager to die," he muttered.
Darrow came in hard and tight, firing as soon as he dared, but leaving it late enough to be in positive range. The white bat pulled out of his line and banked away. Darrow turned and chased it. This wasn't going to be like the last time. He wasn't going to run, frantic, in an outclassed machine. He was a Thunderbolt pilot now, the bastard white bat that had slaughtered all of Hunt Flight, and Heckle too, in a way, was going to be the one doing the running. A vector-aided roll and a burst of speed put Darrow closer and closer still, despite the enemy's excellent outrolls. Darrow got two brief locks, but lost them both. He waited for the third. Interesting, Urbicon thought, his pulse not even drifting in its rhythm. This one has some merit. He flies by the claws. If this had been a quieter hour, he would have enjoyed sport with this child. But this was the day of days, and there was still great work to be done. This duel was over. The white bat dropped down to an altitude of no more than 50 meters and proceeded to whip in and out of the inlets and bays at speeds that Darrow thought he'd never be able to follow. Every turn threatened to smash them into a sheer cliff or clip a rocky outcrop. He stayed on the bat as long as he could and then was forced to climb by a jutting atoll that he knew he would not otherwise avoid. The white bat let him go over, then sliced up after him, firing. Darrow twisted out, but the bat locked him cold. Then shots sprayed in from a second thunderbolt. It was Markwell. Viltry put all his power into a last turn and fired again. Now at last he disturbed the crimson bats enough to break them from Jagdir's tail. One looped back to engage him. "Switch out," Jagdir ordered. Viltry obeyed. Ignoring the looping attacker, he kept on after the other one, lining up. Jagdir broke wide and turned up to face the threat to Viltry. Viltry opened fire, and the crimson bat erupted and came apart. A moment later, Jagdir caught the other one in a head-on attack and ripped it out of the sky. Markwell's flunked attack gave Darrow time to break. The white bat turned out to meet Umbra 8. "I've got him," Markwell cried. "I've got a score to settle." "So have I," thought Darrow, "and I wouldn't be so sure that you've got him either." Markwell fired again, but the razor rolled on its axis and slid under his fire cone. Markwell banked exactly the right way, but the white bat had already whiffed as it looped, and it fell on him. Its gun pods roared. Darrow watched in horror as shots tore into the midsection of Markwell's plane. Markwell wrenched the stick. He saw an engine tube explode off and felt the airframe shake as rounds went into the hull around him. Two shots buckled his air mix canisters and punctured the radiator. Two more ripped through his ejector mount and packed chute, shredding the chute and bursting shrapnel from the seat frame. A chunk of metal chopped Markwell's left calf, and another wickered up from under the seat itself and punched clean through the meat of his left thigh. He screamed in pain, and his bird fell into a sharp dive, but he hauled back on the stick and came up again. There was a track of blood spots glued to the inside of his canopy. Darrow banked. Wounded, Markwell was dead meat. Darrow hit the throttle and shot across the pearl-white bat, deliberately turning out, drawing his aim. The razor followed him. The wounded one wasn't going anywhere. Obercon knew he should take care of the one with the real merit first, especially as the child had now made a very basic mistake and lined himself up, vulnerable for the Echelon chieftain's guns. The auto sight reconfigured. The orange pipper drifted in. Darrow went low through the atolls. He'd made himself a target for Markwell's sake. Running for his life did not seem like the best way to fight the enemy. But he remembered what Eads had said. "Retreat is a hard thing to deal with, but you'll be a better warrior, Enric, if you realize that sometimes that's the only way to win." "Come on, that's right. Come on," Darrow yelled. "You couldn't catch me before. You won't catch me now." Darrow raced between the islets and the jagging rocks, lifting spray in his wake, flying on pure nerve and instinct. He had no idea how he avoided some obstacles. There was no time to think. The pearl-white bat was right at his heels. It fired twice, three times, missing Umbra 9 and spraying chunks of rock from the island stacks. By the claws, indeed. Such skill. It reminded Obercon of a chase he'd once enjoyed in the Machanites, another young pup with promethium in his veins. But the game had to end. "Attention. Target found."
"Good night,"
said Obercon, as his hard-wired thumbs dug at the trigger paddle. Darrow heard the target lock shrilling. Umbra 8, for throne's sake, how long have I got to keep him occupied? The pearl-white bat fired. Two shots tore into Darrow's tail fin. Vander Markwell, travelling at over 900 kph, came up over an atoll's flat top, head-on. He went right across Darrow's plane and blazed his quads on sustain at the white bat, dead ahead. The furious fire needed no angle of deflection. Urbicon's machine flew straight into it, without any time to evade. For a millisecond, the pearl-white razor deformed, its multi-punctured hull shredded. Stress fractures peeled away armor like dead skin. The blitzing cannon shell vaporized the pilot. Then the engine and weapons batteries detonated in a cataclysmic flash. Markwell rode out of the sheet of fire and came clear on the other side. Fluttering hunks of pearl-white armor scattered wide and rained down across the lagoon. I think, said Vander Markwell, that makes me an ace. Over the Midwinters, 1930. Darrow climbed back into the raging air brawl. I thought we'd lost you, Nine, Jagdeer voxed. Copy, leader. I'm okay. Markwell's been hit. I told him to turn for home. Copy that. Umbra lead. He got the bat. He stung the white bat. Definite kill. Jagdeer rolled 2-0 through the streaming tracer. That news was the only thing worth smiling about she'd heard all day. The sky was full of aircraft and fire, like some great scene of damnation on a Templum frieze. With Viltry turning high to her left, she stooped into the pandemonium and started to avenge Blanche. Lucerna AB, 2100. It was now almost dark and strangely quiet. The third wave had faltered and broken half an hour before, and some gut instinct told Bree Jagdeer that there would be no fourth wave. Not that day. The fitters had to almost carry her out of her battered Thunderbolt. Zemek and Van Tull had just landed. Van Tull, sneezing blood, had lost a third of one wing. Viltry and Kaminsky sat with their backs to the hangar wall, drained of all strength. She crouched down with them. She wanted to speak, but there was nothing to say, and no effort left to say it with anyway. Darrow was last back. He had taken 15 of the enemy. A triple ace. He climbed out of his aircraft, dropped his helmet from his trembling fingers, and made the sign of the Blessed Aquila, the sacred double eagle. Commander, he called out. Commander Jagdeer? She rose.
What's the matter, Darrow?
Where's Markwell? He asked. Over the Straits, 2101. Still flying level and true, Thunderbolt Serial 99 Double Eagle crossed the Straits of Jabez at 6,000 meters, cruising, with the fuel dwindling in its tanks. The ocean lay before it. Vander Markwell sat in his seat, his head hung forward slightly. The vox crackled. Umbra 8, this is Lucerna Operations. Do you copy? Markwell did not answer. The damaged air mix system had filled his cockpit with carbon dioxide over half an hour earlier. The plane flew on, true to its nature, at the very last, out across the ocean and into the folds of the night. Epilogue. No fourth wave came. Not that day or any day. Though the air war on Enothis continued for 3 further weeks, the losses suffered by the arch-enemy air force on the 270th were so severe that a willingness to try such a venture again seemed to leave them. The Battle of the Zophonian Sea, as the history texts now call it, was not the final fight of the Enothian War, but it was the most decisive. In the weeks that followed, Lord Militant Hummel's counteroffensive began, and, with reinforcements from the Khan group, the Imperial Guard began to strike back into the south, into a demoralized enemy. The Trinity Hives finally fell, after months of savage fighting, on the 62nd day of 774.M41. By that time, the arch-enemy Magister Sek had fled the planet. Records show that the first unit to breach the Trinity Gates was an armored regiment commanded by Captain Robert Le Guin. During the Battle of the Zophonian Sea, Imperial air losses were 948 compared to 7,840 confirmed arch-enemy machines. Of the Navy wings involved, the highest kill tally per individual pilot was achieved by the 101st Apostles. But 3 other fighter wings, including the Fantine 20, exceeded the Apostles' combined score of kills.
The records show that Captain Oscar Viltry, a Marauder pilot, was killed in action in the interior desert on the 260th day of the Imperial year, 773.M41. That was Double Eagle, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.